Appreciate the introduction. While Sandy's taking care of getting my technology loaded up here, I want to one of my tasks for this conference has been to do a little video clips of summaries of the speakers. And so, for those of you in the audience that are speakers and have come by, thank you for doing that. It saves me a lot of tracking you down in the hall. So I really appreciate that. Before I get started, though, the other thing I want to do is recognize. A colleague of mine, and so Sandy, stay here for just a second. Sandy's been obviously the ramrod on this end, and from our team in Extension in Animal Science, just a big hearty thank you, Sandy, for putting on a great conference, and thank you all for coming. Let's give Sandy a nice big round of applause. It's been the invite. A geneticist on a repro schedule or a repro program, maybe a little different, but. I do appreciate the opportunity to come, and I'll warn you, as we get started, this is going to be mostly a heavy dose of pragmatism, okay? As I got the invite, and Sandy knows a little bit about my predilections and biases, and that still didn't dissuade her from inviting me, so thank you again, Sandy. Selection of replacement heifers is something that I think gets a lot of discussion and is really a challenging topic. And as a geneticist, it's a little bit of a dilemma, right? I work a lot in the seed stock world and in seed stock selection, genetic improvement programs across a number of breed organizations and certainly involved in our seed stock program here at K-State. And that focus is entirely on building unique and valuable genotypes, right? So building animals that have great genetic combinations across a range of traits and pushing those out into the commercial industry. That's the goal of seed stock production, right? If we're a commercial producer, though, genotype's only part of the deal, okay? Commercial production, cow-calf production in particular, and that's kind of where a fair bit of my passion is as an extension educator is in cow-calf's work, it's phenotypes that pay the bills, right? It's the marrying or the manifestation of our management and the genetic potential of the animals we have in our system that come together that create something valuable, okay? As a geneticist, it pains me to sort of put a talk like this together a little bit because a whole bunch of commercial beef heifer replacement success is, guess what? Not genetic, okay? And those of you that know me well know that that's sort of, you know, creates just a little bit of a rub in me, okay? But the reality is there are lots of things that we do in beef replacement heifer development that have as big or bigger an impact on their success and longevity and productivity as do genetics, okay? I'm going to see if my pointer works. So remember the old equation, phenotype is genetics plus environment. It turns out that in many of the traits that are important for the success of a beef replacement heifer, the environmental or the managerial influence and the variation that that causes in performance of those females long run is a lot bigger than the genetic influence we might have over those traits. Okay, and it's important to both, I think, recognize that and then figure out ways to exploit that. Okay, our opportunity in selection isn't always just genetic, right? We don't always select for just genetics. We select for animals that maybe have more favorable environmental effects to improve their productivity and make them more desirable or candidates for selection. And lastly here, I want to think a little bit about what genetic technologies do we use, okay? How many of y'all use EPDs in selection? Okay, almost everybody in the audience. How many of you use genomically enhanced EPDs in selection? Everybody in the audience. Selection index. Pretty much everybody in the audience, okay? Those are the tools that you need to continue to use. We won't get any magic bullets here in this talk. Those are the tools that describe genetic variation by and large. So as I go out and talk to commercial producers, I get this question a lot about replacement female selection. And I really back the bus up a little bit and talk about it's not so much about selecting the replacement heifer for her genetic potential. It's how do we influence the flow of genetics in our population to build really high-quality, high-value replacement females, okay? And that is driven not by heifer selection or necessarily cow selection. it's driven by sire selection, okay? If we remember back in our genetics background, the heritability of traits that are important for cow performance, like fertility and reproductive traits, is low. Maternal trait heritabilities are typically low. And besides that, there's almost no commercial herd EPDs available. Those tools exist. Not many of you all use them, okay? So focusing on an individual replacement heifer genetic potential as a selection criteria seems to be way more complicated maybe than we need to make the decision point. The decision point should really be, how do we leverage sire selection? Because in three generations, sires account for more than 87% of the gene flow in any commercial herd. Okay? So another way to think about that is, if I put effort towards appropriate sire selection to build replacement heifers, I capture about 3/4 of the genetic variation associated with that replacement heifer by just influencing which bulls they're out of, okay, and which bulls their dams are out of, and which the maternal grand dam is out of, okay? That seems a lot more tractable to me than trying to sort through varying levels of information on individual replacement heifers. And in many ways, we're after influencing the average performance of the cows anyway, not any one individual heifer's performance. Okay, so the metrics that matter tend to be herd-based metrics. Okay, so here's a little picture of this influence of sires. Okay, and this, I think, if you don't take anything else home from a genetics talk today, this might be, maybe, at least in my talk, the most important bit. And it's this idea that the replacement heifer gets, of course, half her genetics from sire and dam, but if we take the males in that lineage, the sire here is half, the maternal grandsire is 1/4, the maternal great-grandsire is another 12.5%, that's a big chunk of the gene flow. Okay, and making sure that's right and appropriately selected in terms of maternal emphasis versus terminal emphasis plays a big role in making sure that those replacement heifers have the genetic package that we want them to have. Okay. Said another way, if we forget about this and we select, say, a terminal trait bull and interject in one of those places, have we really done a lot of damage? Potentially, yes. Okay. Bulls have big influences in the herd, and we should leverage that in our decision making. So genetic selection for replacements, again, leverage sire selection. I should really retitle the whole talk. Instead of replacement female selection, it should be sire selection for replacement females, right? That's what the title of the talk should be, okay? We want to select sires for replacement production based on traits of economic importance for maternal performance, so optimal levels of growth, maternal calving ease, mature size, milk, etc., okay? We know there are substantial environmental limitations to cows that have too much growth potential and mature size, too much lactation potential, and all those things have a negative impact on reproductive efficiency. Okay, so we got to make sure our cows fit the production environment to mitigate those. And we want desirable levels then of calving ease direct, particularly maternal calving ease, as we think about these sire selection decisions that moderate mature cow size, making sure we've put additional selection pressure either via index or direct selection on calving ease maternal or maternal calving ease is really important, because there's an antagonism between these two traits. Okay, if we continually select sires in our system for calving ease direct without putting upward pressure also on maternal calving ease, cows get harder calving. Okay, and that's the antithesis of what we want. Okay, heifer pregnancy, stay, dollar EN, maintenance energy requirement, all those things help build those environmentally adapted cows. We should build breeding systems then that obtain and maintain optimal levels of heterosis, and particularly maternal heterosis in this case is the valuable bit, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. And so lastly, kind of as a summary, we want to build environmentally adapted cows, so those cows that fit our production environment best, and then use terminal bulls to meet our market objectives. Okay, and we want to separate those in many cases because we have some real challenges. Okay, so here's a picture of that laid out instead of in words and pictures. Okay, here's the bull that we influence our replacement female's genetic potential for maternal traits and optimization to the production environment. And then we make another decision here of the bull to build that replacement heifer's first calf potentially, but also to breed for subsequent calves in the production system. Okay? One of the challenges, and I made this slide a couple of years ago for a talk I gave at the Range Beef Cow Symposium, and it really starts to sink in when we think about, okay, we're going to put a lot of selection effort on sires for replacement females. What are the challenges and opportunities that exist in that? Okay, one of the challenges I think we face a lot, and the challenge is growing by the day, is the idea that we can select one bull that does everything. Okay, one bull that meets our market objectives in terms of, say, carcass weight, marbling score, ribeye area, and so forth, and also builds really valuable, high-quality, environmentally adapted replacement heifers. There's lots of antagonisms in the market signal we get from the fed cattle side of our business versus the direction and trend many of us are trying to go in terms of the cow side. I'll ask you all, how many of you all want cows that are bigger and give more milk today? Yeah, nobody raise your hands, right? Okay, we all want to try and make our cows lower cost in terms of nutrient requirements and supplementation particularly. So we're faced with some challenges. Okay, we also, though, know we want to leverage breed complementarity and heterosis in our selection systems. So this kind of one breed or one bull does it all sort of strategy is a really difficult one. We're asking lots from those genetics, and if you go and try and if you want just an interesting little sire selection exercise, go do a Google or a web-based sort, pick whatever breed you want, put in breed average for every trait, tell me how many bulls you get. It's pretty close to zero in most cases, okay? So finding one that does everything, even average, is pretty difficult. Okay, so one of the things I want to lobby to you is that we really need to do a much better job of separating what I call the maternal and terminal mating decision. Okay, so being very tactical and very direct in selecting for maternal traits and being uncompromising in the selection of those bulls to build replacement heifers, and then make another decision that we use to build a terminal product, whether that's a market endpoint of carcasses hanging on the rail or weaned calves. It doesn't just pick the one that you're doing and select towards that and separate the bulls that make this happen. Okay, it liberates us from many of those antagonisms and allows us to be much more effective in our selection system. Okay, more flexibility. Okay, I want to remind us, though, in our system, so we mentioned breed complementarity a little bit and heterosis, that if making fertile, long-lasting, reproductively efficient beef cows is your mission, and I think for most of us in the commercial world, that's the goal in our replacement strategy, we really need to think about making sure we have crossbred cows. Heritability for reproduction and fertility traits is generally low. The heterosis impact on those traits is high. Heterosis is a genetic effect that we can leverage to improve reproductive performance and productivity in our cows that we really can't get effectively anywhere else. Okay. That impact is big. There's some summary data from Tom Jenkins at the Meat Animal Research Center. The green bar here represents the value of maternal heterosis in terms of weaning weight per cow exposed. Okay, about two-thirds of the economic value of crossbreeding comes from having crossbred cows, and most of that improvement comes from improved reproductive rate and improved longevity. Okay, so if you're going to trade something away, trade calf heterosis away. Don't trade maternal heterosis. Okay, it's really valuable. My current numbers suggest this kind of crossbreeding system with crossbred cows and crossbred calves, say an F1 terminal sire system, is worth just the heterosis part about $150 per cow per year in today's market. Okay, that's a lot of money. Okay, anybody really optimistic about where calf prices are headed the next 3-4 years? Capturing value and efficiency out of our system with the dollars that we get in is really important, okay? And crossbreeding can play a big role in that, okay? Just as another little numeric example to get your attention, the heterosis estimate for improved percent calf crop wean, so just the number of calves we get to weaning, from crossbred cows is about a 7% increase. So if we put some numbers to that, on 5-weight calves, on 100 cows, that's 7 additional calves, okay, worth about $145. That grosses just over $5,000, or in excess of $60 a calf, okay? really little number in terms of effect magnifies out into a big economic impact in your cow herd, decrease of over $11 per hundredweight in break-even cost. Okay, really important to profitability in the system. Okay, so what kind of replacement candidates have a leg up? Well, we've heard, well, I wasn't in here for all the talks, but I streamed them via Facebook Live for a fair bit of the sessions. I heard no less than six times, and there was probably countless others, that replacement heifers that are born early in the calving season should be on our hit list, right? They're the ones that we want to go after in our system because they're from a set of genetics that work well in our production environment, right? Their dam has been prolific and fruitful under our management, and that's really important. Proven are from a proven sire, so that influence of sire selection. And then several other speakers referenced this. Pick heifers out of the middle of the weight distribution in your cow herd, okay? Why do we do that? It really helps us control two things, right? It helps us control the creep in cow size due to replacement selection. So always picking the biggest heifer, you capture the biggest growth genetics out of your cow herd. It also helps you control lactation potential, right? The biggest heifers happen to tend to be out of cows that are really good milkers, okay? Avoiding those helps prevent that sort of creep in terms of nutrient requirement and input, okay? And lastly here, crossbred. So what makes her successful, though? So we've got some of the genetics bit. The other things that make her really successful are, when does she breed? Okay, is she an early conceiver in your structured breeding program? When was she born in the calving distribution? So again, having that sort of chronology that sets her up for many opportunities to breed in the breeding season, and then certainly some of the genetic effects. Okay. This is one of my favorite replacement heifer selection slides. I don't know, is Rick still in here? Rick Funston? Rick's in the back. This is Rick Funston and others' data from 2012. Again, one of my very favorite heifer replacement slides. And this basically demonstrates that when a heifer's own birth calving period lands in the first 21 days of the calving distribution, second or third, what happens to those females through the production of their first calf, okay? This was a pretty large study, okay? If I remember right, the count here is about 1,000 females. Differences in birth date, so these are the ones born at the beginning of the calving distribution in Julian days. These are the ones born at the end, okay? Weaning weights were heavier as their own productivity. Pre-breeding weight, they were heavier. Percent cycling at breeding, so the first day of the breeding season, a huge difference, almost double, between those cycling and those that were not. What's the likelihood of one of these females getting bred the first 21 days of the breeding season? It was almost zero, okay? Picking one of those heifers as a replacement wouldn't have a lot of sense tied to it. So pregnancy rate at the end of the breeding season, about a 12% difference, pre-calving weight. Number of females that calve during the first 21 days of their first parturition, 81 versus 65, okay? Calf weaning weight, numerically different but not statistically, okay? But the breed up and performance of these females was a lot better than these and based on when they were born, okay? When they were born. What about longevity? This is some really interesting data from Bob Cushman at the Meat Animal Research Center in South Dakota State data. Heifers that calved in the first 21-day period as the first calf heifer, how long did they last relative to cows that calved 43 days or later in the calving season? About a year's difference in longevity in that system, okay? And that's a system. What is that, a nutrient dense environment or a nutrient scarce environment? Meat Animal Research Center. It's pretty nutrient dense, right? It's an above average production environment. In harsh environments, I suspect this number gets bigger. Okay, here's some shorter term South Dakota State data. Already a year's difference in those females as well. So this idea of where she landed in calving and where she breeds up from a chronology standpoint, has a really big influence on her likelihood of success as a cow and her productivity. This is more of the Cushman data. The asterisks here represent statistically different productivity in terms of calf weaning weight. They are different out to calf six. Okay, those cows are, even at 8 years old, are weaning heavier calves than their counterparts, principally driven by the fact that they just calved earlier. Their calves are chronologically older than the ones that initially calved at the end of the calving season. Okay, really valuable set of phenotypes. Cool. So the SOP, if we've got to give sort of advice to producers on selecting replacement heifers, what do we do? I think the easiest thing is pick heifers that are born at the beginning of the calving season. Well, how do you do that? You've got to identify them, right? You've got to have some system in place to demarcate those heifers born early in the calving season. So those of you that tag and weigh calves, it's a pretty easy thing, right? Start numbering them, keep track of days. Okay. If you don't routinely tag all your calves, if you start tagging calves with just a color-coded tag after day 30 of the calving season, you tag a small, relatively small number typically, or a smaller number than if you started at the other end, and you denote the ones that you do not want to consider as replacement candidates. Okay, so there's lots of practical strategies you can apply to demarcate those heifers born early in the calving season. You want to select heifers from the middle. Okay. One of the things that many of us are guilty of is we go to the replacement pen and we start sorting heifers, right? And which ones do we pick? The biggest, fleshiest, nicest, sexiest heifers in the pen. Okay. What we ought to do is do that, and they're the first ones into the sale pen, right? And they might go into a value-added replacement heifer marketing program. They might fit somebody else's deal perfectly, and they'll pay extra for them. Okay. They don't have to live at your house. There's no law that says they do. Okay, if you do those two things, pretty quickly you're to about the number of heifers you need. Okay, other strategies I really like are sort of these ones where we keep a big slug of the heifers and we put them through a moderate development program, apply a fixed time or short period bull breeding scenario to them, and then pick the ones that bred that fit. Everybody else goes in a feeder market heifer strategy. I like those kind of programs a lot, both from putting some pressure on reproductive performance, but also typically if you're a spring calver, then those females are marketed in an alternate sort of marketing scenario from a time standpoint, and you can capture some additional value by retaining those heifers. Okay, so again, I think a big dose of pragmatism here. You might ask, well, how do we use all the stuff we've talked about for the last day and a half? Okay. As an animal geneticist, I view reproductive physiologies and physiologists, AI technicians, as deliverers of genetics, right? That's the mission when we breed cows. So tools like estrus synchronization, fixed time AI, gender-sorted semen, I get pretty excited about as both a seed stock producer, but also as an advisor to commercial producers in figuring out creative ways to solve problems. Okay, and all those tools, either breeding heifers for their first calf and selecting high calving ease bulls, makes lots of sense to me. Using gender sort semen to build really targeted replacement heifers out of those early calving cows in your herd makes a lot of sense to me. There's lots of strategies we can do to reduce sort of the influence of terminal type bulls in replacement scenarios. So, you know, making sure we've got that maternal trait emphasis where we need it, and avoid producing the maternal steers that, you know, in crossbreeding systems that are designed to produce maternal heterosis, one of the drags on the economics of that system are the steer mates to those replacement heifers. Okay, gender sorted semen, you avoid production of most of those calves. Okay, the alternative then is that you get more cows allocated then to terminal sires that, if you're doing your selection strategy, as I've advised, are really terminally oriented bulls that excel in growth and carcass and whatever else you want to put in there, and stretch more value out of those calves on the other side. Okay, certainly genomics tools can play a role here, particularly in, I think, a really underutilized one is just parent identification. Okay, so making sure if we've got a natural service situation going on and we're picking replacement heifers, that we get them out of the right bulls from a maternal standpoint. And a lot of times that means just identifying who dad is, okay? And that's a pretty low cost and effective tool. So conclusions. I think obviously doing the easy, effective things first, I'm inherently just a little bit lazy. I like the work smarter, not harder approach. Make sure as we build replacement heifers that were conscious of the cow size, lactation, sire selection paradigm here, leverage heterosis, separate the maternal terminal mating decision. I know not everybody's going to be able to do that, but if you've got even a modest number of cows and use some technology, this is a really attainable goal. Longer-term goals that we need to go after, I don't want you to leave here and think that selection for improved cow longevity or fertility is something I think is unimportant. I think it's really important, and really, in many ways, that's your seed stock vendor's responsibility. Galen Fink made a comment yesterday about the responsibility we have as seed stock producers to make sure we build bulls that go out and work for our commercial cattlemen. I think that's a fair summary, Galen. Yeah, close enough. and I think that's real. And as seed stock producers, we need to be conscious of the products we produce and make sure they get aligned in the right channel and to the right place. Okay, so with that, I'm going to stop. Hopefully have stayed, I think, Sandy, close to on time, which is good.